Welcome to AM Best Audio.
It's a problem that is facing many of the insurers and will continue until the front end and the back end catches up with the dollars of the front end.
When you're looking at innovation, you want to look at it at all levels and consider all those items. And it's not a one size fits all.
The days of each of us being the smartest organization in the room are long gone, and under the build by partner concept, you know, partnering has never been more relevant than it is today.
Welcome to this AM Best TV special presentation, Pushing Back the Risk Frontier, How Insurers Are Co-opting the InsurTech Playbook. I'm John Weber. Today, new models for managing a successful insurance tech evolution. In this session, we'll delve into innovative approaches that are driving the transformation of the insurance industry. Our expert panelists will share their experiences and insights on effectively navigating technological advancements, implementing new models, and overcoming challenges to ensure successful evolution. With us today are Chris George, Managing Director of MIS, a Resource Pro company. Chris, so glad you could join us today.
Thank you, John.
Next, we welcome in Jeff O'Shaughnessy, Senior Vice President at Hartford Steam Boiler. Jeff, good to see you as always.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Last but not least, we have Paul Mattern, Senior Principal, Dato Insights. Great to see you, Paul.
Yes, great to see you. Thanks, John.
And Paul, we're kicking things off with you today. How can organizations set up an innovation model?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think there's a lot to think through, and to maybe frame it up for our discussion, I think of, the what, the why, and the how. And the what, you know, really ties into the scope. It's important when you're setting up an innovation model to understand, and at Dato's Insights, we see kind of four types of innovation to help you define it. The exploratory, where you're just trying something out. So let's say with AI, when it first came out, just what's the art of the possible, if you will. And then moving from there to the experimental, where you might try particular use cases to bring it across. And moving forward, then maybe tactical, you have current issues or current challenges that you want to face. And then strategic, where you're really looking at new markets, new products, things to bring out. So very important to understand when you're doing it. The other things that are important to consider when working through your innovation is to think about, is this really an enterprise and a business and IT, or is it an IT only? And I think that's a key thing to think through, as well as when you're organizing, are you going to centralize or are you going to really federate something like this? So some organizations will actually put everything in one place, have a chief innovation officer, and then work through it in that way. Other people federate, may have champions that are out there as well too. And I think when you think about the why, a lot of what you're doing with innovation is to differentiate yourself, right? The thought leadership, that continuous, a lot of people looking for that DNA. It's in our DNA and it's in our culture. And I think when you think about how you're going to apply that and, work through your models and things to consider, I think of the three E's. You want to make sure you got engagement, you want to make sure you have enablement, and you want to make sure you're evidencing it. And what we see with a lot of groups and what the carriers are doing with the engagement, you want to make sure at all levels that you got individuals engaged. So it's not just the senior leadership thing. It's not just the innovation team. It's engagement at all levels. And then it's enablement. A lot of the challenges there are, how are you going to enable and make sure that inhibitors that maybe stop innovation are being addressed? And that can be something simple of bringing new software in to try out, having sandboxes, other things like that. The funding, a lot of times, are challenges when you're trying to be innovative. And then the evidence. A lot of groups that you'll see bring together, John, are looking to do things where it's a shared. So you might see things like, if you're going to do it from your business and your enterprise perspective, you might just do brainstorming and innovation events that go around anywhere from a new product that you may be trying to develop to processes, how to improve a process. You can do the whole spectrum. And then on the IT side, you just might do something like an event around the hackathon or just doing coding events and competitions. So I think when you're looking at innovation, you want to look at it at all levels and consider all those items. And it's not a one size fits all. You know, when you're looking at a small organization versus a large organization, how you implement it, considering all those things that I just went through, may vary. So the context of what you're working in and how you're working and your size is important. And then last, in closure, leveraging your partners is key when you're looking at your innovation model. So you might have a sourcing partner. They have more scale than you most likely have, and leveraging them for your innovation model and making sure that that extension, they're bringing things to the table, is key as well, as well as all your solutions, your admins and your system integrators that you might be using, if you're modernizing, et cetera, are all key elements of what I would consider as part of an innovation model and things for carriers and teams to think through.
Paul, I really like what you said there at the end. I think the days of each of us being the smartest organization in the room are long gone. And under the build by partner concept, you know, partnering has never been more relevant than it is today. So good, really good point.
Chris, what are some ways insurers are using new technology models in their day-to-day business operations?
Absolutely. Thanks, John. It's a great question because what we're seeing in the carrier space right now is really the balance between risk assessment and also routine repetitive tasks. How can we have the underwriter focus on the quality of risk and the profitability of their book and their outcomes? And so the low touch, no touch renewal is a big concept that we're constantly hearing, and the execution of straight through processing, defined as, the ability not to underwrite if they meet certain criteria, such as loss ratio, footprint, the ability to pass those renewals straight through, and having the availability of technology with a touch of a button to execute that renewal quickly, execute. And as well, the last guest also talked about the partners involved in that whole supply chain of a renewal, all the way through the agent, all the way through the underwriter, underwriter assistant, all the way to, you know, at times BPOs to execute those. So in our marketplace, what we're seeing very much is they focused on renewing that or writing that account, the renewal touch, if they've hit certain criteria, why touch it? Focus on continually finding better risk as they go. And the technology in the market is demanding the ability of one touch, low touch to be able to renew these accounts very quickly and seamlessly.
Yeah, I think that straight through that you were talking about is extremely important. I think, you know, with all the experiences of, our customers and producers and all involved, the stakeholders in the process at the carriers, that straight through is just critical.
I want to touch on the Internet of Things here for a minute. Jeff, what are you seeing when it comes to adoption of IoT, and where is that being developed?
Yeah, thanks, John. You know, the exciting thing is that over the past several years, the market has proven that sensors and IoT, common acronym for the Internet of Things, and bringing technology and sensors into the insurance world, it's working. We've proven that, particularly losses such as water, freeze, fire, are either preventable or certainly we have the ability to mitigate them considerably. And so, for example, at HSB, we've been working for years to develop not just devices, but proprietary algorithms that are built into those. And really a full stack of services that go along with that, which are critical to having a full sensor program alongside the insurance program. So what we're really seeing is that a lot of the primary carriers, and it's all shapes and sizes, from small regionals to nationals, and of course multinational carriers, across a wide range, they are incorporating this and having success in lowering loss ratios and achieving a significant ROI when implementing sensors as part of their insurance coverage.
Thanks, Jeff. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll take a deeper dive into IoT and insurance. This is AM Best TV.
Accelerate your insurance business with Exceedance. From consulting to digital platforms, Exceedance empowers 200-plus insurance organizations with AI-driven solutions, deep expertise, and operational excellence. Learn more at Exceedance.com.
We're back. I'm John Weber, and we're speaking to Chris George, Paul Mattern, and Jeff O'Shaughnessy. And Jeff, where are we seeing IoT making a difference when it comes to loss control?
Yeah, you know, John, we get really excited about that due to HSB's lineage. Of course, we've been trying to inspect and insure and improve insured locations for almost 160 years. So the really cool thing about sensor technology is that it's essentially an inspector, a little tiny virtual inspector there 24/7 collecting real-time data. So instead of visiting a facility once a year or once every 2 years or deploying a carrier's loss control resources, which are quite precious and expensive, we can really help our carrier partners to have eyes on a risk 24/7 at a very low cost. And really what we're focusing on is in that area of water, freeze, and fire. Attritional losses that in fact have proven to be mitigatable or preventable. And we're seeing it in a lot of different occupancies and segments, many that you could imagine: habitational, retail, assisted living, schools and munis, you know, a number of different occupancies that lend themselves to having a virtual eyes and ears there when others may not be. Seasonal businesses, secondary homes and residential. So really across the board. And so when you think about that for the loss control standpoint, risk management, it has a few benefits. Obviously, it can prevent losses, and that's huge. It's also a leading indicator of where carriers should deploy those human boots on the ground for a more in-depth review of a risk. In many cases today, you know, they're either guessing or they're using, I'll call it, more traditional data elements to select where they send those few resources. So IoT can help them understand that better. And then as loss control morphs into underwriting, sensors can provide interesting carrots and sticks for underwriters as additional tools. So examples of a carrot would be lower deductibles, premium credits, maybe higher sublimits when an insured installs a device. And of course, examples of sticks could be, hey, we're not going to write this occupancy or this geography or this value unless and until an insured implements an IoT program. And so that the carrier, you know, can feel better about the risk that that they in fact are insuring.
Thanks, Jeff. Let's get back to the topic of developing technology in-house. Chris, are you finding that companies can integrate their underwriting processes with homegrown technology?
Yeah, the focus on that underwriting process, and especially when you get to the larger carriers, you have the legacy systems and then you have the newer tech. What we're seeing in the marketplace is the ability to organize, especially when you have business partners that may be in the business process outsourcing side all the way to the agency side. And so organization of the data flow as we're renewing and executing new opportunities is the ability to have a workbench, right? Workbenches give the availability to have the agent, the underwriter assistant, to go through that whole process from OFAC to subjectivities to rate, quote, bind, bill capabilities to execute, renew, endorse, and renew, and also keep the day-to-day operations going. But it's that struggle back and forth between the legacy and the new, and the new technologies with the APIs and the ability to, you know, kind of go right through and foster collaboration and execute, and everybody knows what everybody is doing to execute that constant back and forth between the players from the insured all the way to the agent, the MGA, as well as the carrier, and keeping everybody on task and executing and getting the things done. But the workflow management of the ability with workbenches to organize and execute has been a huge success in the last several years. And I think it's only going to get better and better as continual use of those systems, working with larger legacy to newer technologies as they continue to build out.
Yeah, having that connective tissue, as you say, you know, across all those moving parts to do their job, I think is critical. And it's a great point that you brought up.
Paul, how are companies changing their technology models?
Well, that's an interesting question. I know we talked about the innovation model as we started out. And I think if you think traditional, that's really being challenged now with all the changes over the last 5 to 10 years. Typically, we have kind of a run and grow, kind of a support team and a development team. But when you think of all the technology adoption that's happened, the data, AI, the cloud, right? The development changes with Agile and BPO, I think, as the team has been talking on several instances here, and all that sourcing changes, the labor arbitrage, and challenging things too, now that that's not maybe as cheap as maybe it was 5, 10 years ago, and all the external environment, you know, that we think of the fraud, cybersecurity, all that's changing how we think about our technology team. And if you look at it from a leadership, the implications of all that, leadership, now there was a CIO, right? But now you might have a CDO, a chief data officer, right? AI might even be with that chief data officer now as well. CISO, you have a security officer as well. Digital officers are now prevalent across carriers and organizations. And, you know, the CTO role changing with the cloud. And, you know, things now maybe not having a whole infrastructure environment that's on-prem and maybe running from the cloud, changing that role. So there's leadership role challenging our standard just one CIO and how they partner with the business. And I think when you're looking at your talent and impacts to your talent and how you think about it, you see a lot of insourcing now and a lot of nearshoring more in the offshoring. So that's starting to be impacted. And also your teams. Your teams are now more empowered and enabled. So it's really changing the model of IT from your typical run, grow development teams in a more functional view into your more agile teams, product view, as well as your leadership now being spread across several leaders. In a lot of cases, merged with operations. Again, though, I will caveat, the size of your organization and other things drive how that impacts your model. So a smaller organization may not see that bifurcation of different leadership, where in large organizations, that's very, very, very prevalent. So it's challenging from that perspective.
You know, John, I would add to that. That was a great point, because what we're seeing in the marketplace is this move to MGAs, or these really mature underwriters in the books of business. The traditional marketplace of the carriers are having to serve them, and the business side of the shop is kind of wrestling with the IT side of the shop that may be a couple of years behind in development or have projects for 2 years out. And they're having to find quicker ease of use, more updated systems to be able to meet that marketplace and bring on quicker and better business. It's an internal struggle of the carriers that we're seeing for other options other than internal.
Are you finding that to be the case at HSB as well? Leadership roles are changing as a result of technology?
Yeah, John, we're seeing it both at HSB and, of course, across our 200-ish client insurance carriers. And it's a dynamic environment, right? Everyone is trying to figure out, as Paul said, whether it's cyber, whether it's AI, and, of course, the area of technology and IoT. I think in a lot of cases, carriers have and different roles within insurance have tried to say, hey, Paul, great job. We're going to give you an additional role. Or Chris, great job. Here's another, you know, responsibility for you. But increasingly, we're realizing that those are all areas that need to have focused roles to really move that innovation that Paul talked about earlier in the call.
Thanks, Jeff. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, the challenge to stay innovative. This is AM Best TV.
Accelerate your insurance business with Exceedance. From consulting to digital platforms, Exceedance empowers 200-plus insurance organizations with AI-driven solutions, deep expertise, and operational excellence. Learn more at Exceedance.com.
We're back, and we're speaking to Chris George, Paul Mattern, and Jeff O'Shaughnessy. And Chris, what are your views on front-end development of insurance technology versus compliant back-end reporting?
Yeah, again, another great question. As we're facing, you know, where the dollars are falling is on the front end. And I think carriers, MGAs, risk takers need to really evaluate what does the back end, the data quality, the execution, if you think about the whole life cycle of, you know, all the way to the rate, quote, bind, bill, the ability to report correctly, the emergence of these MGAs that have great underwriters and great front ends, but the ability to put those into a bordereau to be able to have correct coverages that go from the front end all the way to the policy. Is the data correct? Are you spending more time endorsing, adjusting, touching, correcting, location schedules, execution, all of this? What we're seeing in the marketplace is, boy, they want to have the front end, the agent, ease of use, and have a great user experience to execute insurance, but not the ability to finish and execute all of the data reporting on the back end. I think it's a problem that is facing many of the insurers and will continue until the front end and the back end catches up with the dollars of the front end, as we're seeing in the market.
Yeah, I think those challenges of carriers modernization, right, and getting those back ends and the front end really kind of masking maybe what some of those limitations are. I think your points are extremely valid.
Yeah, and we certainly see the need and desire to implement API interfaces right between all those partners, Paul, that you talked about earlier. And of course, there's varying degrees of sophistication and preparedness at different organizations, be they carriers, agents, brokers, vendors, to do that. So certainly there's a bit of a transition period that I think we'll all go through, but eventually that'll be the norm, if not something newer and better.
Yeah, and a big driver, for, as you were saying, for why people want to modernize, right? So that they can take advantage of that, right? A kind of APification, right? So they can.
Paul, how do you stay innovative while still keeping the technology in-house?
So that's a good question with the in-house, because I think our in-house definition has changed a little bit with our partnerships. When we look at our internal staff, we have to consider both our business internal as well as our IT. And also I think now our partners. We talked a lot about partnership. Our solution partners as well as our sourcing partners is extremely key. So we need to think of our in-house from all those perspectives. And then when you think of the talent and you want to keep the empowered and keep them engaged, that's critical, is that engagement and empowerment to stay innovative. It's not something that you set up the office and you're ready to go, but some of the events I talked about earlier, the encouragement, senior leadership and involvement, and I think that's key. Another part that's key to it is the career development, right? We got to stay current, right? So just saying that something, that's why one caution to centralize innovation, you might just give that to the select few that stay current and on leading edge. I think that's something where you want to make sure in everybody's career path and then their training that's across the board. And leveraging the partners, cannot state that enough. They've got the scale, especially in, say, smaller or mid-tier carriers, to be able to take advantage of that and keep that innovation flow and making sure that you're going through that life cycle I talked about earlier, those kind of four stages, exploratory, experimenting, right? The ability to then do tactical and then do strategic, to constantly do that with all new technology and keep people engaged, keep them empowered, and make sure it's part of their career and ongoing training. I think that's the way to stay innovative and keep it fresh.
Yeah, Paul, one interesting item that resonates from what you said there is at HSB, we've had a lot of engineers at HSB over the last 158 years, but we now have sensor engineers, IoT engineers. And I think these folks have the coolest job in insurance, because all day long, they're just, you know, trying to break and play with different devices around fire, water. I think a lot of, you know, 14-year-old boys would probably enjoy that job, but you know, it's pretty innovative. It's different, but it's now something that's necessary in the insurance space that previously just didn't even exist. So it's to me that's an example of some innovation that we probably would not have envisioned just a few years ago.
I would add as well the retention of talent and energizing and incentivizing, because we see so much movement of talent and at times books of business for another shining little star, and the ability that technology and how good the technology is from where they currently are to where they're going to go is a key component of key. And what we see is a lot of the underwriting and their books of business can be moved from one to another. So retaining that, and also what technology are you on, the familiarity of that technology is going to be key to retain key individuals within the organization.
You know, something we haven't talked about is data, and that's so central to insurance and insurance technology. Jeff, is data being harvested or leveraged as much as it should be? And where is that data being generated from?
Yeah, John, that's probably a topic for a few different episodes in the future, right? That's a big question. I would say that yes, it's being harvested, but I think we're probably still in the early innings of where we can go. You know, traditional insurance data, insurance to value, and you know, all that good stuff. Most carriers have done a really nice job over the past several years in keeping up with that and properly leveraging it. And I would argue that right now in the marketplace, we're seeing a little bit of a tale of two cities of carriers who have been really good at leveraging and harvesting and embracing that data. And maybe those who weren't as successful in doing that in terms of some of the results we're seeing in the marketplace. As we look into the future, IoT is just one example of new data elements that are coming in. These are data elements that never existed before. The volume of them blows away any other data element out there. We're talking about billions of bits of data that we're getting, you know, routinely. And over time, it allows carriers, underwriters to make more informed decisions. There's a level of data that's being harvested today to facilitate IoT programs, to identify where traditional loss control can be implemented and where sensors can be placed, as we talked about before. But really, the biggest piece is how do we create correlations in the future based on this new stream of data we're getting from sensor technology and correlate that to the historic and the traditional data elements to really open up and create new ways of thinking about risk. And just a couple of really quick examples, even customer behavior. If we know that customer one had a sensor, had an alert and didn't respond to it, and customer two had a sensor, had an alert and responded to it to mitigate a loss or prevent a loss, that's interesting information that a carrier may be aware, may want to think about how they incorporate that. If we think about how we look at where sensors are placed during, you know, back to Superstorm Sandy or more recently Storm Elliott or some of the polar vortex events, that can be informative of how resilient that particular location is. And even if there are other locations that don't have sensors, if they didn't have a similar experience, that can help you understand that they're more resilient as a property writer. So those are just a couple examples of where this new stream of data and the correlations associated can unlock a lot of benefits in the future.
Yeah, I think the ability to really leverage third-party data with auto carriers is so critical. Now, I think the internal data and using that and what you have yourself merging that with other external data and being able to pick up on broader scales and patterns is critical on so many fronts, from the loss front you talked about earlier, underwriting, and it's really key and a huge asset for carriers to take advantage of.
Complexity of using third parties. Who owns the data? How do you protect that data? Everybody wants access to the data, and then the reporting of correct data. So it's something that this industry really needs to get ahead of and quickly be in a position to make the right decisions, the right moves to make all of our carriers and our business partners profitable, but also with less touch and availability to that data.
What a great discussion this has been. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our panel, Chris George, Paul Mattern, and Jeff O'Shaughnessy. Log on tomorrow for case studies, how insurers are launching their own evolutionary tech. I'm John Weber, and this is AM Best TV. Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.